The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, Golden Peeps. It's your girl, Goldie. This is Goldie's Closet on the Realm Network, Vince Russo's brand. Now, if you're listening, that's great. But you'd have even more fun, more of a pristine experience if you go over to russosbrand.com and subscribe. I think it's $3.99 for the whole month of amazing, incredible, exclusive sports entertainment and more content. So go check that out. Also, check out my Patreon, the band's Patreon, at just patreon.com/Goldilocks. Check that out as well. Support, because we got you and we love you. Speaking of love, speaking of somebody that is truly, again, bad to the bone. Oh, I love saying that, because this is an all-Americana staple of frickin' rock and roll. That's right. They've performed over 8,000 ferocious and furious shows, Live Aid, SNL, epic performances for over decades. It doesn't get any better than this next friend, dare I say, than Mr. Bass Playing, Low End Driving, Big Booty Bill.
Baltimore Billy Blau on the bass.
Hi, Billy.
So put your hands together, Realm Network. It doesn't get any better than this. For the love of God. I was reading and looking at things, and it said that you were either in the band, and the band started either in 74 or 75, and you came in 77. So when did the band start, 74 or 75?
The band started on December 1st, 1973.
So everything's wrong. Now we heard
it. And I joined the band in 1976.
Wow. I can't. This is your complete life, your existence. This is all that you know to the world. Like, I mean, you breathe rock and roll. Like, you are like living the American dream. Well, maybe not during the COVID, but I've seen your video and your posts, and it seems like you're doing well and you're staying in shape and you're exercising. You're keeping a healthy brain. That's good.
Well, I don't know about, I think my body's in better shape than my brain.
Really?
What's
the hardest thing, Ben, to deal with for all this? Cause I started out okay, and then I'm noticing I've got a short fuse lately with shows getting canceled now, and you know, October and whatever, November. It's like I'm almost starting to blow up now for what happened for the last 6 months. So how are you dealing with all of this stuff?
I was okay at first, but now I'm more at wit's end, because my routine, which I've been doing for the last 40 some years, is completely out the window now. This is the longest non-show, tour, whatever, that I've experienced in my adult life. So it's a little bit, and I had a routine, and it's totally out the window. But that said, I think I'm in the 0.001% of the population that's actually not hurting too badly.
Okay, good.
I mean, I'm very fortunate that I'm in this situation, but it's still, I'd rather be working than not.
Yeah, no, for sure. I know my friend, and I'm sure you know Bobby Capps from 38 Special. I've seen him posting some like outdoor gigs that they're doing, some big shows that are at like outdoor places where they're starting to slip through the cracks. So I just hope that back to, I know they say there's a new normal, but I refuse to believe that. I think it's going to go back to, it'll eventually go back to what it was, and maybe more safe. But like, I want to be doing shows, Bill, but I don't want to be doing shows like in the middle of a field with people like 20 feet apart and stuff like that. It's just freaking weird, you know?
Well, it's not, that's not rock and roll, but
no,
I think after we get through this, it will calm down. But I mean, this is the 19th anniversary of 9/11, and we survived that eventually and got back to a new normal.
What? So, where were you 9/11? Were you playing shows like after 9/11? How far before you started playing shows again? How? What, you remember that? That, I mean, it was 19 years ago. I remember it.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I was home and I was what every rock and roll musician does. They seal coat their driveway. I was in the middle of that. I came into the house and the TV was on. And I saw this and I like, holy. And I, when you're doing seal coating, you can't stop either because it hardens up. And I was like, I was in a panic because I saw this going on. I had to at least get to a point where I could stop. And then I came back into the house as the second tower collapsed. And it was like, whoa, I don't know what to make of all this. So, and you know, I've got a lot of people in the city and up here being close to the border, there was all kinds of panic going on because border patrols flying over back and forth from the airport here to up to the border. It was crazy and nobody really knew what was going on. So it was pretty frightening.
Yeah.
I mean, I was safe here, but all around was just better.
And I'm sure with, I guess, 20 years of touring under your belt at that time, that you had a lot of friends and relationships in that area. And that's the hardest thing, is to just wonder who's okay, who's not. Who's
right. Around. We're, you know, just trying to get information out was, I mean, because everything just kind of like sealed up right as that happened. So it was a while before we could actually track down various people that were in the city that we knew lived in the city. And so it was a constant thing, a daily thing, just finding out more information about what was going on. So I'm glad we're past that. And now that the COVID thing is just...
Oh, I'm just done. I'm just done. And
yeah.
You said something interesting. You're like, that's not rock and roll. And you would know now, you're not old, but you've been doing this for a long time. There's a difference. And when you think of rock and roll, like, I mean, take us back to like, how did you start in this band? Did you have a friend? Did you have a relationship? Did you get a call? Were you a George Thorogood supporter? I mean, was he doing his solo stuff and you saw him? Like, how did it start that you joined this band? Because it's epic.
Well, these guys were, they had gotten it together and were playing, and they were based in Wilmington, and mm-hmm. then they had gone to Boston. And they had started to build up a following up there.
Really?
And I had met Jeff.
Cooler?
Jeff Simon, the drummer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of Jim.
And Jim is the Cooler, yep. The guitar player. But Jeff had come into this pizza shop that I had worked in and locked his keys in his brand new VW bus. And I gave him a ride back to his parents' house so he could get a spare set of keys.
Kidding me, bro. You're shitting me.
And then I didn't see him again for like about a year and a half. And there was a concert at a local bar. I think it was Johnny Winter. And I had gone in to check this out. And Jeff and George and Ron, who was playing in the band at the time, came in. And Jeff introduced me to, he came up to me and he said, you remember me? And I kind of did. And then he introduced me to George and Ron, and they were all there to see the show. And he said, yeah, we're back in the area and we're playing around and we're playing at a house party here in a couple of days. So I saw Johnny Winter. And then the next couple of days later, I was supposed to do a gig with a local band, and it fell through, and I ended up going to this house party where they were playing, and I walked in, the place was packed, and this is a tiny little row house, and I just kind of remember this guy duck walking across the floor and up the ceiling, up the wall. And, you know, that's just the way it just appeared to me when I walked in, because it was just full of people. And I said, wow, these guys are great. And there was no bass player. It was just Ron playing rhythm guitar, George and the drums. But there was a bass and an amp sitting there. And I said, I asked Jeff, I said, do you think I could sit in? And Jeff said, well, you got to ask George. And I asked George and he said, no. So this went on. And then they were doing a benefit for a charity at a bowling alley. And I went over, saw them play there. And so I started talking to George and I said, you know, if you're looking for a bass player, you know, I'm interested. I really like what you guys are doing. So a couple of weeks go by and I get hooked up with this other band and we're starting to get gigs and playing around the area. He calls me up and I said, well, man, I just got into this band here. I don't think I'm available right now. So goes back. Oh, anyway, about a couple months later, I run into him again, and I said, you know, I could be interested in something like this. You're serious, and you seem that you guys know what you're doing. So he said, well, come up to my house, and I'll let me go over some of the material with you. And so I hitchhiked up to his house.
Bill.
And he had an acoustic guitar, and I had a bass, and I plugged into his little amp, and we went through some songs. Oh, anyway, about a couple months later, I run into him again, and I said, you know, I could be interested in something like this. You're serious, and you seem that you guys know what you're doing. So he said, well, come up to my house, and I'll let me go over some of the material with you. And so I hitchhiked up to his house.
Bill.
And he had an acoustic guitar, and I had a bass, and I plugged into his little amp, and we went through some songs, and then I spent the night, and I got up and I hitchhiked back to work, and then we did this for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then 4th of July weekend of 76 was our first gig in Philadelphia, of all places, too. The Bicentennial, it was a big deal there.
Well, did you feel like you won the lottery, or did you feel like you deserved it, or that you expected something that the universe was delivering? Because, I mean, this is a really cool, this is about as cool of a story as you get, like the pizza party guy.
Well, I just said, these guys are serious. All these other guys around the area, they get to a certain point, and then it's like they got a party, or they got a girlfriend, and they just don't seem to be serious. And Jeff and George seemed that they had gigs. They wanted to play gigs, and I said, that's what I want to do. So when we started playing, I said, perfect. This is what I want to do.
And fast forward, how many years later? All some people still want to do is party and hang out with their girlfriend. And bass players, I got to tell you, we are on our 109th audition for a bass player. And now we're just running bass tracks, Bill, because we have seen over the last year 109 guys who have either girlfriend issues, wife issues, issues I can't even expand on. Or they are just not.
Well, yeah.
They're just not serious about playing. It's like, why do you call yourself a musician? How many years before that point in time, before you played that first show in Philadelphia, how many years had you been playing bass?
Well, I was pretty young. I think probably, let's see, probably about 5 years.
So you were serious.
4 years.
You had it under your belt. You knew what was going on.
Well, I was working at it. I mean, I started playing in high school. I was in a high school band. And then after that, I was floating around a little bit in the Delaware area, and I bumped into those guys. And it worked.
I had no idea of your story of this. I'm reading, you know, your bio on the page. I think it's great that they really dig into all of this personal stuff about you. I do have one question, though, that I wanted to ask you. Let me see if I can find it. There's a good story about Bill back in the day going down the hotel lobby wearing only a sheet. Bill. Now, this is a story that came in from none other than your tour road manager, Mr. Adam Condi, our mutual friend. He said, ask him about going down the hotel corridor in only a sheet. Come on, Bill. Pull from the crevices.
I think that was well before his time. I think he's just making that up. I mean, the only really good one. Well, there was a couple of them. I remember crawling out the window of a hotel in Paris on the fourth or fifth floor and going all the way around the building and climbing in Jeff or George's room.
Why? Didn't they have doors that worked?
No, I was drinking wine. And it just felt right. And then hung over the next day, Jeff, Hank, and I decided we were going to go to the Eiffel Tower. And the elevators were broken. And we walked up to... the very top was closed. So he only got as far as where the legs go, maybe probably 10 stories high. That cured a hangover, I'll tell you that. But I think what Adam Condi might have been referring to was another incident. Why I don't drink anymore, but this was I think it might have been in New Zealand.
Okay.
And that was a travel day where we all drove from Auckland to Wellington and working on experimenting with the Guinness that they make down there, which is like a lot stronger than what we get in the States, and probably even stronger than in Ireland. And I think by the time I got to the hotel, I think I fell asleep, and they decided they would liberate my luggage and towels and everything else. So what I came down to the lobby in was a pair of shorts that somebody had pity on me and threw it out the window, because I wasn't wearing anything when I started banging on the doors looking for my clothes.
I was laughing so hard at your response about climbing out the window that my eyelash fell off, my fake eyelash, my false eyelashes. So I had to go readjust that. What's your relationship like with Jim Sewler?
Oh, he's a pussycat.
That's what Adam told me. I said, you got to give me some stuff on Bill to ask. And you love cats. You're a cat guy. How many cats do you have at your house?
We have two.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, Josephine and Bump.
Josephine and Bump.
Yeah.
Is that another interesting story that goes behind the name of Bump?
Well, our last set retired a year and a half before, and I finally was talked into getting a fresh set. And on the way back from the pet store, we were talking about names, and I said, the pet store had named them Robbie and Jolene.
Robbie, and they always name them the most stupid things ever.
And so I'm thinking, no. So just Bump just came out of, that just came to the surface.
Bill, you're one of a kind.
The last pair, I had Flathead and Mikey. And my wife didn't think Flathead was a good name for a female cat or a kitten at the time.
Was it a Persian?
No.
You just decided to call it Flathead.
Yeah, I thought Flathead was good. But she didn't go for that. But Mikey stuck, and then she became Isabel. But I had another name for her, but I won't go into that. And so this time I got in the first gig with, how about Bump? But my wife has changed it actually to Bumper. It's not so harsh.
How long have you been married to your wife? Is this your only wife, or have you married a couple times?
This is my second marriage. And my wife, Karen, and I have been married 13, no, what year are we in? It's 2020. It's been 18 years.
Oh, wow. So your first wife was during your Eiffel Tower days, I presume?
Yeah.
How was that being on the road as much as you guys are and being married? That's got to be like really tough. Like, I mean, you know, anybody that's gone for a while, but you guys were gone for a lot. I mean, you did a lot of shows.
Yeah. I mean, back in the late 80s.
Party
in
time. Early,
in the 90s, we probably did 6 weeks on, a month off, 6 weeks on.
Oh, you did have a month off. Okay.
More or less, but it was so often there would be like one-offs in that. But I mean, we would go out for like a 6 week stretch. We can't do that anymore.
No,
I don't think young people can do that anymore.
I don't think people are doing that anymore. Like even like all of my friends that are in the real heavy party bands, like it's really Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, maybe a Sunday, but I don't see a lot of them. I don't see a lot of people coming out on the weeks to see concerts anymore. I don't know why. And then now with the COVID, it's totally changed. But
yeah. Well, I think that's kind of a Nashville model, the weekend thing where you shoot out. That's what I've picked up from our crew, which are Nashville-based people, and they seem to think that that's more of a Nashville thing, that everybody just shoots out for the weekends and then comes back. And us being an East Coast, Northeast-based operation, we kind of toured like that. I mean, the buses came from Nashville, but,
yeah,
you know, they seemed to work. And also, at that point in time, we were at that age, we could go out for a lot longer.
Yeah.
But it's everything's gotten a lot smarter and a lot more technically proficient where you can go out and in shorter bursts and do it. But it was easier to go out for a block of time than going in and out like they do. I don't really agree with that, because once you get on a routine for, I mean, we go out and we straddle like 3 weekends. So we'll start like in the middle of the week and go 3 weekends out and end on a Sunday and come back on a Monday. So we're out for almost 3 weeks, little over, you know, depending on when we start and what time of year it is, because there's more Monday gigs in the summer than there are in January. So.
Really? You play really interesting places. I mean, like, I remember where did I see you at? Was it the zoo that I saw you guys at in Minneapolis? Was it the Minnesota?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely, people are out on during the week and have their families out. And it was a huge show, and it's a huge production, and you guys play for like a long time. Like, that's not easy on anybody's body. That's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the animals up there. That's what I couldn't figure out about. It's a very interesting place, but I feel bad for the animals because it's loud.
It was pretty. And then that's what I was going to wait till we were on the interview when I said something about the elephant ears. I had told you about this horrible joke that my dad likes to tell to all of my friends growing up about something about an elephant, and he pulls out his right pocket inside, his left pocket inside, resembling ears. And then he's like, wait till you see the trunk. And then and I'm just like, really? I mean, he must have done that stupid joke and it was always guys that I liked or I wanted to impress at some event. And he when he's with my musician friends, you know, yucking it up here, I know when I see that second pocket come out, I'm like, Jesus Christ, you son of a, and I run up to him and just say, stop telling that damn joke. And then you would send me pictures for a while of different, you know, trucks that had the elephant ear. And people online know who Tom the Conservative is. Guys, let me just tell you, my dad was not always that conservative. Anytime somebody's going to unzip his pants and, you know, ta-da with the drum roll of the joke. And that's nothing your daughter wants to run in on. But one of the shows that it lists in the bio that I didn't know was Live Aid. So you guys were at Live Aid. I don't even know what year that was, but let's talk about that show and how epic that must have been.
I wish I could, but I wasn't there.
Were you not there at that one? Okay, so what year was that?
It was 1985.
Why weren't you there?
my stepdaughter had graduated that year from high school, and we had taken her to, we had planned to take her to Europe, and we did.
Aww.
And at the time, we weren't planning to work for that. There was a 3-week break, and Live Aid, we hadn't planned on doing it. We were, Tears for Fear, I think it was, canceled. At, okay. Like 2 days out, and they looked around and they found us, and then they realized they couldn't. We deviated from our itinerary, and instead of following that, we ended up in some place in Switzerland, and they couldn't find us. And so they got Jan Zakowski from the Nighthawks and to play bass, and then they got Bo Diddley, Albert Collins to sit in. And unfortunately, Bo Diddley would not sign the video release, so none of his segments got aired.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah.
Don't you think if you were going to sign a release, Live Aid would have been the one to do it? I don't know.
Well, I mean, he got burnt a few times, and he was just did not, you know, it was a last minute thing for him. He got paid. He didn't probably know. Nobody really knew how significant it was going to be until after the fact.
Yes. So. Yes. What about the Saturday Night Live show? Were you at that one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about that, because I've got a funny story to tell after you, but I did go to SNL a few times and saw some bands that were on a label that I was being courted by, and yeah. It was a very interesting experience. It wasn't what people would have expected for Saturday Night Live. So tell me what happened for you.
Well, it was a long time ago, and it was... I had never actually even seen Saturday Night Live because we always were working on Saturday nights, and actually set that show after the fact, watching it was the first time I'd ever actually seen Saturday Night Live all the way through.
Okay.
Because
do you remember who was on it when that time rolled around? Do you remember any of the people?
I can't remember. Okay, it was 81.
All right. I'm 82. Looking it up. Looking it up.
Yeah, because I don't remember. I think maybe Louis Gossett Jr. was the guest host, maybe.
Oh, wow.
I think. And I guess we were the musical guests, but I can't remember any of the skits.
I'm going to look that up. It says Joe Piscopo, Eddie Murphy, Gail Mathias, Gilbert Godfrey, Denny Dillon. Like, those are some... Like right around there, that was the cast then. So I'm gonna have to totally try it. I wonder if we can find that performance.
I'm sure it's on YouTube. I would guess. I mean, we did Bandstand twice, and I kind of remember
really?
Those because you can still get the, you can still see those.
Oh,
we did Midnight Hour, the Wolfman Jack show. We did
Get Out.
We did Fridays, which was the spinoff of the takeoff of Saturday Night Live that was on ABC, I guess it was. And I think that show, who was on that? I'm thinking that Michael Richard was on that, but I might be wrong. Because we did a show as a trio back in, I think, 77 or 78 in D.C., and Michael Richard was like the opening act. He had a stand-up routine. And that was way before anything else happened.
What was it like, you know, American Bandstand? I mean, it doesn't get more American than that. You know, I mean, that's legendary, epic status performing. What was it like backstage? Was it just like it is now, or were things different back then? Was it more Spinal Tap, or was it more Green M&Ms, or, you know, Demand,
no,
or
no,
a rider,
no.
Or what, you know, or was it just
we didn't have a rider. We were just there. We were told, you know, we did what we were told. And you're everything's, you know, we were in awe of the whole thing, so we weren't making big demands.
Okay, I didn't know some people might have liked the Total Spinal Tap vibe where, you know, you were, and then now you're humbled later on. So you were in awe of it. You did know that it was a big deal. That's nice to hear.
Yeah. And I think Dick Clark was even making cracks about the fact you're going to make a lot. You're going to get paid big. You're going to get paid scale.
Oh.
You know, so you weren't doing it for the money, but it was for your exposure.
Absolutely.
And it was good. It was a good experience. And I forget, was that the show? One of them we did, and Gene, the dancing machine, the guy that was always on the gong show that they bring out. He was, you know, I forget what show it was, but he was in the crew that worked the studio. Yeah, and they said, and people were going, you know that guy, that's Gene, the dancing machine. Right. And the poor guy's like, I came out and did a silly dance for Chuck Barris, and now look at me, all these kids are thinking I'm a big deal here, or bugging me to dance, you know.
I love it. Wow. Oh, this is such golden material. Like, I really appreciate you sharing that with all of us. I mean, you saw it firsthand, and it's nice to hear that, you know, you did understand that it was for some exposure and people were cool and they weren't making psychotic demand. There's some of the things that I hear these days, and I just want to go, like, I don't know. I think things are different than when I had my deal and I was running around. It's just, it's funky. I don't think it's as real as it used to be.
It's not about the M&Ms. It's not about the M&Ms. It's about reading the writer and paying attention to the detail. I mean, that's what that's all about.
Wow. The writer. What's the craziest band, you don't have to say their name if you don't want to, or artist that you worked with where you kind of looked from afar and thought, why are they acting like this? Or I'm glad we don't act like this. Or did you witness any in the interesting temper tantrums I have in my day? I'm wondering what comes to mind with you seeing another band, you know, and again, if you don't want to throw shade and say their name, you can just talk about the instance. If you want to say their name, that's fine. I always talk about experiences and instances. I don't always name names. What's something that you saw that really stuck out to you as, man?
I guess early on, because when we went to England the first time, punk was still a pretty big thing. And
sure.
And they had put us up in this little boutique hotel, which turned out it was very cool. I actually went back and stayed there years later because it was just so neat. And we stayed there a few times. Well, one time we were there and Eric Burden was a guest. And then a guitar player, Henry McCullough, was a guest, and they were just hanging out. And then there was this band, these kids, and we were trying to figure out who they were. They came in and they were all punk looking, and they pointed to their manager and had him come over and ask who we were because they were afraid to talk. They didn't want to talk to us.
Oh, God.
And it turned out it was the Buzzcocks, and we did a few shows with them. We never quite figured out what their appeal was, but apparently they had some because there's still some kind of legacy there. The whole punk scene was kind of odd. We did a show and I'm thinking in Birmingham where we got spit on, especially George being up front for the whole duration of the set, and it was just, oh, what is this all about? And then also the fact in England at the time, they only played 45 minutes to an hour for a set. And we were used to playing bars where we play five sets in a night.
Yes.
So we would play, we would do a sound check for an hour and a half and then take a break and then play for an hour and a half for our first set and then take a break and then go back out and play. And they were like freaking out, like they can't turn, you can't now, we've got to turn the house. So we're just taking a break, we're coming back, we're going to do two more sets. They didn't understand it. We didn't understand it.
When you said that you did five sets, were you guys doing all original material, or were you doing cover as well?
We were doing what we do, which is our interpretations of other songs. George had a few originals, but most of it was just our interpretation of other songs.
I love it.
Bourbon, Scotch, and Beer is two songs that were John Lee Hooker songs that George pushed together and became what it is now, but it wasn't
really
the way they were original.
I didn't
and people and yeah and if people hear the original version of each song, they would have to think about it before they could actually figure out where we aren't the originators of those songs. It's just George mashed them together.
When did Bad to the Bone originate? When was it written? Did George write it? Who wrote it? Where did it come from?
George wrote it. I don't know where he conjured it up, but it was recorded in 82. And I guess we started fooling around with it somewhere in end of 81, 82. I mean, that particular stretch of time was extremely busy. 81, we did the 50 states and 50 days tour.
Let's talk about that. 50 states and 50 days. Seriously, what was that like?
That was crazy. Well, we started out, we learned a lot. We learned we'll never do that one again.
What did you learn?
That we've done it now. It doesn't need to be done again. We did 51 shows in 50 days, and it was born out of our driver and thinking this would be a great idea to hit all 50 states in 50 days. And then we decided we had to get Washington, D.C. and Maryland in at the same time. And we did it. And then the Stones decided they wanted to go out, come over and do the Tattoo You tour and have us on some shows. So then we had that crammed into the middle of it. We started the 50-50 tour, and then we started some of the Stones shows. Then we had to stop and do our tour. It was 50 days in the middle of it.
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't know that. So you toured with the Stones as well? I didn't know that.
Well, it wasn't exactly with them, but we did 25 shows with them.
That's with them.
Well, it's not exactly like flying around with them, but we did a bunch of weekends with them, I guess.
Was there any of the members of the Rolling Stones that after 25 shows that you became friends with, that you still talk to, something that you saw that you liked, that you learned, that you were inspired by? That's 25 dates is a lot. Like, shit, if we open for somebody once, that's on our resume. So what's something that you learned?
Ian Stewart is piano player and founding member, took a shine to us, and he started sitting in with us after about five or six shows, and eventually ended up playing with us on all of the dates, and then went in and recorded Bad to the Bone with us and played that record, played on
no!
that record.
Yeah. That's amazing. Wait a minute. That's amazing.
And then when we were in Europe, we had a night off between shows in Rotterdam, and we booked a club date for us. And Ian dragged Bobby Keys and Mick with him so that they sat in with us. Ian was playing with us the whole time, but he got Bobby and Mick to come down and did a half an hour's worth of songs. You can find that out there too. It's pretty frightening, but it's out there.
I want to look at what. So what am I going to go look for? Say it again. Say what this is called.
It was the Destroyers in Utrecht with Mick, Mick, Ian, and Bobby Keys. You can probably find it that way.
I'm gonna look for it.
Yeah, I could send you the link if I find
it. We would love to see that. I mean, that's just like gold right there. It's.
I don't know if there's a video of it. I'm. I mean, I see it in my head because I was there, and there are photos of it, but there is audio of it that's out there.
I'd love to find either. I'd love to find any of that. Some of the best relationships that I have formed in entertainment and in rock and roll have come from, we usually open for people, and then they come and do their show, and then while we're leaving the stage, we exit. The gear is either shuffled off to the side, or we bring two sets of gear that we set up really early in the morning at like the hotel. It'll be at a Hard Rock, and we'll be playing at the Center Bar. So we do a double. So we do opening, and then they play. And then now when their show is done and it's closing and all the people are pouring out into the hotel, they have the same band that opened out playing for them for the next 5 hours, like the 4 hour sets, that gimmick. And the best relationships that I have ever formed, that we've formed, were the national act, such as yourself, coming out, having a drink, meeting supporters, and then sitting in with us. You know, like it's just such a magical time and career. And then there's always like some asshole that we have in the band who, when like, I don't know, like the drummer for Styx comes up and says, could I sit in? And then watching one of our guys go, no, I don't want you to play my drum. You might break something. I remember one guy like literally told him to go F himself and said, sweetheart, I'll buy you a brand new drum kit if I do anything wrong. Let me sit. I went with you, you know, play with Goldie. Like there's so many times where I was so mortified, Bill, and so embarrassed that like, here's like the, you know, I mean like big bands, Foreigner, Styx, you know, they want to sit in, and like the douchebag mother truckers that I was with or that were subbing or filling in, you know, they didn't want him to touch his guitar, or I'm just like, oh my God, you idiot. So we've learned and met a lot of really, really, really great. There's one guy from Stu from what? From the band Sweet. Did you ever meet those guys? The band Sweet?
I don't know them.
What was it called? Ballroom Glitz, some kind of song. It was a big hit.
Oh, yeah. I remember
we played with them, and all I remember is this guy was going off on this like huge tirade and throwing things around the stage because he was like, there's dirty power. The stage has dirty power. And I'm like, what is he talking about? And that's why I said in the initial text to you, like, sounds like dirty power. And that's what it was. But like, Stu from Sweet, and I don't play with dirty power. And he was just a diva, like throwing. And that's why I asked you about the rider and just about things that you've seen. We've opened and played with Marilyn Manson, and the stuff on that guy's rider is just like mind blowing. Let me just tell you, mind blowing.
Well, a lot of this stuff, there are people that have details and a lot of little quirky things that they put in the rider, but that's also, we had a tour manager, and it will remain unnamed, but he would put things in the rider just to see that people were actually reading it. I mean, he would just specify, I need a table 6 feet by 3 feet, and I need four straight back chairs. Nothing like the M&Ms and that kind of stuff, but just little things like that he would put in just to make sure people are reading it.
Okay.
Because a lot of things, I mean, promoters, it's a business, and they're trying to cut corners here and there. But if the show ain't selling, they're trying to figure out how to make some money somewhere, and it's usually catering. maybe in the day, I don't know. Nowadays, things have changed. There's only three promoters anyway. So,
did I say that? You look amazing. Like, you look really good, and you lift weights every day.
I try.
I
prefer to run, and that's what I've been doing up until I slipped and fell in my driveway in the ice, and I've torn an ACL and meniscus, and I can't run, so I'm waiting. That's another problem with the COVID, is like the doctors are like trying to get an appointment. I'm supposed to see a surgeon on Tuesday next week and hopefully get in the right track with that. So I've been lifting weights, and I started swimming because I need cardio, and I've been doing that since the Y finally opened up.
And before we get into your yoga, I was going to say that when I first met you, I think you look like a young William Defoe. You see that one? Have you ever been told that you look like William Defoe? Because you do.
Well, do I hope.
You know who the hell William Defoe is, Bill.
I do, but I hope he doesn't hear this.
No, that's who I thought you looked like. And I had the pleasure of taking your photo. And I remember that day like it was yesterday, because Jim didn't get the memo about the photo shoot. And he came down in a huff and a wind, and he was really upset because he couldn't find his hairbrush. And I just remember going like, this is going to be a really fun, it's going to be a fun shoot. I knew it. It was in Minneapolis. It was before your, before your Zoom shoot.
That was a great shoot too. If he gets up on the wrong side, if he chips a nail, he's hard to live with.
He's a great guy though. It was really fun. I got to meet Billy, and that was just a really fun day. Like I would love to do that again sometime. You guys were just absolutely so great, so gracious at the show. And then I got a chance to see you guys in Nashville, Tennessee last year, the year before at the Kid Rock concert.
Oh, that thing. Oh, yeah.
That was phenomenal.
Did you? Oh, you couldn't make it to the Ryman. Also, I knew you guys had a little bit of a
tornado
situation too.
Yeah, you couldn't even get to that. That was absolutely, like, I didn't even know how bad it was. I just know what people in the area, like, just down the way from me, because our neighborhood got hit bad too, and they were just saying, like, you're not even going to be able to get to the Ryan. So that was a decent turnout, though. People did come to that show, or was
it?
Really?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
We got there.
And it was because the night before we were off, and we were out looking at this storm. You know, I didn't realize, I heard the sirens going off, and I'm like, what is that noise?
Yeah.
You know, and then got up and looked.
Go inside.
It wasn't bad in the West End where we were, but apparently it skipped over town and then hit the east side of town and really tore it up. So we were really, really lucky. But yeah, I think somebody was extremely, I don't know how should I say it, incapacitated, and insisted on trying to go out to the bus, and apparently the wind was blowing everything sideways. They made it, but I heard about it later. I had gone to bed early.
So you're not a big partier anymore. When did that stop? Did you just wake up one day and say, you know what, I don't want to be outside of a ledge in Paris on the fourth floor? How did your more healthy lifestyle begin? When was the inception?
Well, I don't know. I've always been relatively healthy. I've been running. I've been a runner for years, and I think I just said, well, I don't need to drink anymore. I don't need to do this anymore.
Just woke up one day, and that was it.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you know when it's done.
Yeah. So you've got a few years under your belt, and it's always interesting when people ask me about, can you give me some advice getting into wrestling, which is usually one word, which is run.
Yeah.
I don't like to tell the young ones coming up just how brutal that business is, but you know, everybody isn't going to be in a pizza parlor with somebody locking their keys in their VW bug. That's not going to happen for everybody. From what you've seen in your time starting until now, because you're still going, and you guys will be going until somebody years and years and years from now probably has a heart attack on stage. And I'm talking way, way down the line, but you're going to go out with a bang. I know it. If you had to give somebody some advice now with everything that you've seen in your time, you know, what would it be? Is it something that's modern day, or is it something that you learned when you first started or along the way? Is it fundamentals? Like, what's something really important that anybody either starting out in the music business and entertainment, or maybe some people right now that are just really depressed and down during the COVID, like, what are some words that Bill, and it is Blow, that's how you say your last name, correct?
Blow.
Blow.
Yes.
Oh, shit, I better go back and
You better do some correcting.
I'm going to do some Blau. It's Blau?
Yeah.
Do you know when you look it up online how to pronounce it, it says Blow?
I'll have to correct that.
I'm going to correct there's people there.
I know people's name are Clough, C-L-O-U-G-H. So I get Bluff a lot. And though, T-H-O-U-G-H. But Blau, right, yeah.
Say it one more time.
Blau.
Bill Blau. I correct myself.
Owl. Blau.
Give me some advice. Give me something different than I know I told you I'd keep you for. This is longer than I said I'd keep you. So we'll wrap it up because you've given us so many amazing stories and nuggets. What's some current modern day advice?
Well, if you know how to develop, if you have common sense, you should work on developing and maintaining it. And strengthening it because it's certainly in short supply these days.
I've never heard anybody give that advice, and I would never associate the word common sense with any musicians that I know. I can't stand both of them.
Well, I think it's becoming more and more imperative as the country gets more polarized, and so many different news sources and sources of information. It's like, oh, it boils down to common sense. And I think you also need to be able to turn off your TV and pick up a book.
Nice.
Don't believe anything you see on TV practically. Except for like videos of rock bands. You can believe all of that.
Oh my God. Jeez. Words.
And if you look at the world like wrestling, if you believe in, if you take wrestling serious, then you're in trouble. But if you take wrestling for what it really is, entertainment, then I think you have a chance.
Nobody that is watching this podcast right now is going to agree with that end part. That's okay.
This isn't live, is it?
It's not live. I'm just saying, like, that's going to be great when we get to the end and they're going to be like, because there's a lot of guys that really, you know, they live and breathe wrestling. And it's.
Well, I'm not saying it.
Oh, I know what you're saying. I'm giving you a hard time.
Okay. I mean, we have met people that think that wrestling is real. But, and then you have to argue with people. Is it real? Is it fake? And you have to just say, well, you have to figure it out. I'm not going to tell you.
It's best to leave that stone unturned and to preach. To preach the all you need to believe in is what you see with rock bands. What can we expect? What's coming up that you know of that you can, that's tangible, even COVID or not COVID? Are you recording anything new? Are you doing any solo projects? I know you guys had some solo things that were out. Everybody, George seemed to be pretty good about plugging that stuff on the website.
Well, I don't. Buddy is doing a bunch of stuff. He's always doing stuff.
With that girl, like I remember, he left Nashville and went to Mississippi or something.
Yes, he's him and oh shit! Now I'm having a brain spasm. I'm cut. Him and Christy are in Gulfport. Okay. And. Yep. Maybe we should not talk about. He writes a lot, and he's been doing stuff with a bunch of guys up in Nashville.
Nice.
And they do file exchanges, and so he writes stuff out, plays his parts, sends it up to Nashville. The drummer and bass player and guitar player put their parts on it.
Nice.
The band is releasing a show from 1982 from Boston, and this is a Rounder project. Rounder was our first label and has now been putting out some of our other stuff. And I'm not sure when the release is for it, but they're putting it out on four vinyl LPs as well as CDs and everything else. And it's going to put us in the hole because that's a show that really smokes. I mean, it's 2.5 hours long, I think. It's four sides of LPs. And I think there might not be, I won't say what's not on it, but it's really a great show. And wow. Bad to the Bone is on it before we actually even knew how to play it right.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it hit bad. I think Bad to the Bone had only been out for a couple of months when we did this show. So there's a lot of stuff on this record. When I first started listening to the tapes to figure out what we were going to do with it, I said, wow, what happened? We used to play really good.
I'm sure that you still play really good. I actually was writing down while you were talking a punch point. So I'll make sure that we leave all of your other bandmates information out of this podcast and we'll punch you in on, we're doing this incredible. How many records is it going to be?
What's that?
How many records is it going to be? Is it going to be vinyl?
They want to release it on vinyl. It's four sides. Or no, it's four LPs, so it's eight sides.
Oh my God!
And then they're putting out a CD or double CD of it, and I don't know. I guess streaming is inevitable, so it'll probably do that as well. But I'm not sure when it's released. I just looked at the artwork yesterday, and it's pretty soon they're going to put it out. I get more probably it'll come out for Christmas.
You know what? At Christmas, maybe I can grab you again for just a few minutes and maybe a couple of other guys, and we can just promote that on the Realm Network. That would be absolutely amazing. Everybody would love to know to get that for Christmas. And Vince Russo, who's I'm under his umbrella for this actual show. He is a huge vinyl collector. He has a vinyl podcast that's on his brand, and they do reviews of vinyl. So that would be really, really killer if we could get as many of you just to show your face. I can show up to 50 people on these windows. So we should do that and pimp it out.
Yeah.
This has been my guest, Goldie's Closet, episode 81 on the Realm Network.
Vince
81. I've been doing on my own. Before that, I was doing a ton with Vince, but I went solo 81 shows ago, and what an 81 it has been. Bill, say your name for the love of God one more time.
This is Bill Blau with Thorogood and the Destroyers.
Bill Blau with George Thorogood and the Destroyers. It has been an absolute pleasure. This show will be out, Bill, not this next week, but the week after. We cut it up into a nice promo. It is free for people to listen to on all streaming platforms. And once again, everybody, if you are listening to this, we highly recommend you going over to russosbrand.com and subscribing for $3.99 for incredible sports, entertainment, and more content. So you can see Bill's beautiful face and definitely mine. So we're signing off, Bill. And at the end of every podcast, we always do a little clappy clap, a little golf clap. Come on, let me see it. Clap with the straight shirt. Club. Once again, I'm not wearing any pants, but it's my show. Bill, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. You are amazing.
Everybody, it's your girl Goldilocks, and we are inside Goldie's Closet. And I want to ask a favor of you all, whether you watch the show or not, if you come to our band shows, what have you, it's something that you can do to support, and it costs nothing and no time at all. If you shop on a very popular online website, I would really appreciate it if you would bookmark some of the items that you are shopping for. And if you could just simply do this, go to goldieknows.blogspot.com. If you go over to the right, all the way to the bottom, the About Me section, there's a link. It just says I'm an Amazon affiliate. If you click on that, it takes you inside my umbrella. And everything that you order, I can earn just some help and support to keep all of this going, to keep the band going. We've got a hefty vehicle repair. It's pretty substantial. So it would be really great if you could remember my link. We get some support. It's that simple. I love you all. Thank you for making the time to stop by and check out everything that we're doing. Mwah.